Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to another episode of FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for being here. And what we hope will be another fun episode, insightful, inspirational episode. Our guest today is going to be Stephen Pollock. He hails from Northern Ireland and now lives in Pennsylvania. What brought him here was his faith. Would you come all the way from Northern Ireland or far lands to share your faith with a congregation? But he shares that story as well as the fact that he used to work in medicine in Northern Ireland and his young path. He also has FSHD, something else he had to share with his congregation, along with his family of five. He has five kids. He shares that information with us too. He has a rich life, and FSHD has been walking with him in that life. And he shares that story with us like it walks with so many of us listening. So if you want to be on the show, like Stephen, FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org, he actually found me on Facebook. He listened to some episodes and felt compelled to share his story and wanted to. And he reached out to me through a direct message on Facebook. You can do that. I'm on other social media platforms as well. And it's open for you. Please find me, friend me, whatnot, direct message me. Love to hear from you. Love to connect. And please share these episodes beyond the community. That would be fantastic. Also, special thank you to FSHD Society for always helping get these episodes out into the world. Anne out there who does a lot of the backside editing and whatnot, things I hate, don't like, she is amazing at. So the way you're watching it is all because of her handiwork. So thank you to her. I think some takeaways before we start the episode I want you to key in on is Stephen talks about use your news of FSHD, your story, for good. You know, don't use it for sympathy or to get something from people, for pity. Use it to try to inspire others to share your story for a positive reason. It was very interesting. He was diagnosed when he was not 16. His faith came to him when he was about 16. He'll talk about it like, I'll call it a near death. He might not say that, but it definitely played that way in his story. He talks about that. And then later, not only like 2 years ago, he was diagnosed at 48. He's 50 now. So think of that time and his life. And he shares that. And some of these amazing takeaways to me is the journey, the calling. And you can only ignore it for so long until you have to follow it. And that is different for many of us, not necessarily faith calling, but for what you do. And FSHD, it was more of a passenger for him, it seems, than it was something that stopped him. That's what I found remarkable through this conversation. Is that it was something that was more part of his life, just another part of his life. A pivot, for sure, to be diagnosed with something. And he had some medical background and some medical studies in there, so he knew something was off. But even for him, knowing what he knew of medicine more than the average person, as he was schooled that in Northern Ireland as a younger person, he still didn't key in on it till later, than in knowing what it was. But it still didn't stop the calling to follow his faith, to become a pastor, to move his family from Northern Ireland to Pennsylvania, to be a pastor here in a Presbyterian church. And that's remarkable, right? I mean, and the story he shares with us about coming out to his congregation is also interesting, because not too many of us have to do that to a mass of people at one fell swoop that kind of look to you for strength. He keys in on something that says that he used his weakness to show strength in his congregation, where he thought he had to show strength to show strength. Very interesting perspective, because there's no question FSHD is a sign of weakness. You cannot tell me otherwise. Of course it is. But what do we do anyway? Well, most of us share the stories on this podcast, these great guests we've had, because they're kind of giving examples. Well, I'm going to do it anyway, or this is my adaption, or this is how I do it. That doesn't mean that they're without struggle, or that it's perfect, or that it's easy, or any of that. We just are here sharing our something, and how do we guide through it anyway? And I think Stephen does that remarkably well, and wanted to share that with us. And that's why he reached out. And that's why. And maybe you will too. You'll feel compelled to do the same thing after this episode, like he did after listening to some episodes. Stephen also follows the show. Make sure you do that and let your friends know. Our email is fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Once again, follow me on social if you'd like. Without further ado, here is the episode with Stephen Pollard. Advancing FSHD research just got easier, simpler, and faster. The Better Life FSHD Research Gateway is a new digital research platform built for FSHD researchers and clinicians. The Research Gateway connects researchers, clinicians, and people living with facioscapulohumeral muscular dystrophy in one powerful ecosystem, so you can access real-world data, meaningful insights, and accelerate discoveries that change lives. Several hundred people living with FSHD are contributing real-time patient-reported data about their symptoms, function, and quality of life. As a researcher, you can gain access to that vast data set that reflects how FSHD unfolds in the real world. Whether you're designing a study, analyzing progression patterns, or researching for better ways to measure outcomes, the Research Gateway was designed to accelerate your research. Register today at research.betterlifefshd.org. As promised, we have our featured guest in this episode. Stephen Pollack has, I am a guy that likes accents. I'm not going to lie. I wish people say I have one because I'm this Midwestern Wisconsin guy, but I think our accent is annoying. I think it's whiny and sound really cool. You know, no one wants to sound like a Midwest guy from America, but a Northern Ireland accent is cool. And you get to share with us today. So thanks for being here. Thanks for spending some time.
Well, thank you for allowing me to join the program.
And there it is. See, people, I'm telling you, those that are just listening, even like they just tuned in, like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. That sounds good. So you're originally from Northern Ireland, but now you're in the PA, Pennsylvania. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I moved here in 2017.
Okay. What brought you?
Okay, so I'm a pastor. And there's a little church in Malvern, Pennsylvania, just along along Route 30 outside Philadelphia, but less than north from Philadelphia. Okay. So there's a little church there, and they invited me across to be their pastor in 2017.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were invited to come.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we kind of do things. The Presbyterian Church and the church calls. They extend a call to a candidate for the ministry. So I came over in 2016, preached a couple of times in the summer of 2016, and then they eventually held a church meeting and extended the invitation for me to come and pastor the church. That's how it worked.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So you had no family here in the States prior to that, or did you?
No family here, no connection. I'd lived in Michigan for a year in 94, 95, and a gap year before college. But no connections. But the church here has connections to the UK and to Northern Ireland. So they'd have known of me in that context. I was pastoring in the UK in those years. And so the invitation came, and I felt it was the Lord directing me and the family. As I'm married, I have five children, and we all came across. Yeah, we came across 9.5 years ago now.
Wow. Five kids, you said?
Yes, sir.
And what's the age range of the kids?
Yeah, the eldest is almost 25, 25, 23, 21, 19. And then we have a 12-year-old, a 7-year gap. And we have a little 12-year-old who is precious.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's that last one coming through the pipeline, right? It's like, okay.
Well, she definitely gets a softer parenting approach than the older ones did. That's for sure.
Yeah, I only have two kids, and I can even say that. It's the second one did not get it as quite maybe rough or watched as closely. Like, he's fine. What's he playing with?
Oh,
the outlet. He's totally fine. He'll figure it out. You know. Yeah. No, I totally get it. and kudos to you. You rattled out those numbers of their ages very quickly. I mean, most would struggle. So well done.
Some of those ages aren't accurate right now. They're coming those ages.
Yeah, like how would we know if it was right?
Correct? A bit of guesswork there.
and of course you also have FSHD, which is the big draw, right, to have you here on the podcast. But I find that there's a lot of interesting nuggets within your life story, it seems like, and the faith is definitely one of them. And you started wandering that direction before we get too far that way. With FSHD, when did that start to kind of rear itself or kind of make itself known in your life?
Yeah, I look back now, I was diagnosed almost 2 years ago, but I now know with hindsight, my first symptoms would have been in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s.
Okay.
I was in medical school in Belfast, and one of the early classes, the anatomy classes, the guys had to take their shirts off to do surface anatomy. So I'm standing in a class with my shirt off and getting my shoulder examined. And one of the students said, "Your shoulder is weird."
Wow.
And I had a winging of my scapula. It's functionally, it wasn't working right. They couldn't orientate scapula and clavicle and collarbone. All those things were weird. And I went to see a family practitioner who then referred me to neurology. And I was diagnosed with a nerve palsy. I played rugby. I was still playing rugby at that time. That was my chosen sport. And they thought I had sustained a nerve injury, accessory nerve palsy that was affecting the trapezius muscle. And they said, "Oh, you've got a nerve palsy." But with hindsight now, I know those nerve conduction studies are easily misread and misinterpreted. And they weren't looking for FSHD, and neither was I.
Right.
But that was the beginning. My right shoulder didn't work in my early 20s, and began to kind of be aware of that as weakness above my head. But I just put it down to this rugby injury and did that for a long time until probably 4 years ago, began to notice just more problems and back pain, core issues, stooping and sipping. Just general weakness, and I was shooting with a friend. Some of the guys in the church like to shoot pistols at a range, and I couldn't hold the pistol, which I could have done 5 years ago. And then suddenly I couldn't hold it, and I began to think, I need to look into this more. There's something more going on here than a rugby injury. And then I began to doing some digging and research, and I think I know what I've got here.
So up to that point, you were still under the impression it was this nerve issue from rugby.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. That was probably, certainly 20 plus years, just assuming that. And again, I wasn't working manually. So I've always been in, my work has always been in a kind of an office desk setting. So the primary problem was shoulders, but then I got back problems. I got back pain. I began pulling muscles in my back. And I now recognize I'm really pretty badly affecting my core. My legs aren't too bad, but my core is not good. So sitting is a real work. Just to sit at a table or a desk it takes a lot of effort. So all of that began to factor in. I thought there's more to this than a shoulder problem. You know, and just a rugby injury. But hindsight's 2020. I see it all now and I see a lot of things, but it didn't manifest itself. I felt guilty. I didn't like to do painting jobs in the house because I couldn't reach the ceilings. I couldn't reach the top of the walls, and I felt lazy. Yard work. I got so fatigued doing yard work in the garden even in my 30s.
Yeah.
My wife was doing the yard work, and I just felt so pathetic. I couldn't lift. I couldn't move. And I felt I was just a lazy person, and I wasn't working hard enough, and that it was just I wasn't fit, wasn't strong. And look back now, and it all makes sense now. But through those, definitely mid to late 30s into early 40s, there was problems developing that I wasn't perceiving. That was part of the background, you know.
Well, the fatigue is interesting because we had a guest on previously that I had on the show, and he specifically talked about that, like how fatigue would equal then the word lazy came in, like it's like almost like a chain of words, so to speak. And to me, that also then affects like the masculinity side. You know, oh, you're weak. You can't even reach to paint. Men should paint. You know, we should be strong and all this kind of stuff. And like you're inundated with that from a very young age. At least I was, you know, if not necessarily my direct, you know, father or upbringing necessarily, but even just you're in rugby, right? That's a masculine sport. You know, American football here, same kind of thing. Weightlifting and all that kind of stuff. That's how you, you know, prove your manhood a little bit. That's how you even get a mate. Like, I should be strong. You know, how am I gonna be masculine? Do you feel like that's kind of attacked that, you know, even the mental side of things a little bit, your masculinity, identity, so to speak?
I think it did at the time. I'm okay now. Now that I've got an answer, you know, I can rationalize it now in my head and say this is not a reflection, but
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a greater inability to do things, you know. And I was talking to my wife just recently, and we were reminiscing back in our early years of our marriage, and we would go kind of the equivalent of tubing in rivers in Northern Ireland, speedboat, inflatables in the background, and when I fell off, I couldn't get myself back on the tube. And it was a thing called banana boating. It's a large tube, and I was embarrassed. My friends were there, these strong guys, and I couldn't get myself out of the water.
Yeah,
and I just so that was
our, I can feel that moment honestly.
It was awful.
Right now.
It was awful, and you then begin to back away from those things.
Yeah,
you know, and so that definitely was things that I think if I had known more at the time, it would have helped going forward. But that was the way it was, and I didn't know what I was dealing with, and it had definitely been a struggle. But looking back now, the answers are there, and I'm much more content in my own mind looking back.
Yeah, for sure. I think once you have an answer or a reason and you can explain that to people, then it's not an excuse anymore. It's a reason. Because I think other people think, oh, this is an excuse, you know, what's wrong with them? Why is he have fatigue, or why is he can't do this or this? And I think most people would be nodding their heads right now into whatever that path of their life, they could look back and go, oh yeah, I remember I couldn't do push-ups and I had issues with this and this and this. And then you have to kind of it just feels like you were wearing it a little bit almost. You know what I mean? Like people can see this. They can see that I'm weak here, or they can see that there's some issue. And at the time, you don't know what it is. And then when you can finally name it, I think it helps more internally than externally. I think some people just don't even know what the heck you're talking about, especially if you give them the whole FSHD word. Mm-hmm. They're like, what did you just say? You just made that up, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives a little bit of a path to explain, you know, just explain, this is my situation. This is my something. So it does make it easier. So I think, but you know, there's so many people, you mentioned it before, like aren't being diagnosed properly, you know, and kind of getting the word out and like letting people know, hey, this is a real thing. When you started to realize, okay, this is what this is, how did your family take the news of diagnosis? Was it equaled relief because they knew what it was with you, or?
It was difficult. There was a progress there. Like, my wife took a trip back home to see her family two summers ago. And when she was away, I was doing quite a bit of sort of nighttime Googling and researching and trying to figure out, because I have rheumatoid in the background, very well controlled rheumatoid, and I was trying to identify was there a connection between rheumatoid and this, and I wasn't initially thinking down of muscular dystrophy, which I should have done. But so she came back from Northern Ireland, and I gave her a printout. I said, I think I've got this.
Okay.
We talked about it. I began to put two and two together, and I think I've got FSHD. And that was probably August of a couple of years ago. And then I spoke to my family practitioner who really didn't embrace it. I did a wellness check. He said, I kind of told my symptoms. And he said, well, there's not much you can do about those things. And did a CK blood test, but FSHD, the CK level's normally, it's often normal or slightly raised. Mine was slightly raised, but not alarmingly so.
Yeah.
And it was actually, I talked to my rheumatologist then a couple months later, and he scolded me for not telling him sooner. He said, you should have told me sooner. And he put me in touch with some neurologists in Philadelphia, and that was a diagnosis. And then for my wife and I, the challenge was not, it was not the present. It was the prospect going forward. It was kind of the recognition that my 60s are going to feel different. So I'm 50 now. Retirement and the desires that perhaps you've family and expanding family and in-laws and maybe grandchildren, all of those things you use from traveling, all of that was going to be affected. And that's what impacted us. In some ways, we had the, it was helpful to have answers. So to look back in the previous 20 years and kind of fit in some of the blanks, that was helpful.
Yeah.
But the challenge was then, well, what's this going to look like in 10 years' time, 15 years' time? Because I know that things progress gradually and slowly, but there were functional drop-off points that I was now experiencing that I hadn't experienced in my 20s and 30s, but now I was experiencing things that were significantly different. You know, begin to limp when I walk too far. There were things that there were just more and more difficult, you know, getting dressed, using shoulders, standing, all of those things were getting more difficult and it was becoming more apparent. So answers were good, but the future was the concern. I'm sure it's true for a lot of people. Just the recognition that what's it going to be like in 10 years time?
Mm-hmm. I do kind of chuckle at those retirement ads, you know, when they're seeing people going always to, you know, they're still windsurfing and they're still running on the beach. And I'm like, that's a joke. That's a joke. Like, no, that's my negative side here. I warned you. And I'm like, it's a joke. I'm like, what are the odds of someone of being that healthy that they're going to do that stuff, right? Yeah, be ready for your retirement. It is. You're right. It is a big curveball. It almost seems like it answered some blanks, as you mentioned, like you filled in those blanks a little bit from the past, but it created new ones going forward. You know, what's it going to look like now? You know, I felt, and maybe you feel the same, I don't know, but when I got the official diagnosis, it was odd, right? Because like, it's still me. I just know this about myself. So I had to kind of like almost convince myself, like, it's okay. Like it's still you. Like you just know this now about yourself. But it also then felt like someone started, I don't know how to describe it, like a race. Everything became very much in a hurry. Every experience, everything, if I'm going to do it, I better do it now. Yeah. Like that like just set that off.
Yeah.
Like you better hurry your ass now, buddy. Like that's kind of like, I felt like this like anxiety to like get moving if I was going to do something. Now I definitely haven't done enough when it comes to seeing things or whatever else, but like that's kind of what catapulted me to go, like I have a baseball business and it was just kind of a thought and I went, no, I'm doing it. This is it. Cause I'm not gonna be able to do this forever. I'm going. And as soon as I found a business partner at the time, I literally warned him. I'm like, this is going to go hyper fast. So if you want to jump on, you got to hold on. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm going all in, like chips, everything. We're going fast. We got to grow this son of a gun as fast as possible. Okay.
No, that's
right. To his credit, he stayed with it, you know, that long. And then he's like, then his life grew a different direction. So like, he's like, pass the baton to new partners with me. But it was like, let's go. Like we got to hurry. Did you feel that? Did you feel like anything you had to experience now, you have to do it now?
I've always felt that way. So okay. I've always been conscious that every day is a gift. Mm. Like, you know, also I'm a pastor. I've got a faith story background and I came to a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus, forgive the terminology and the jargon, when I was 16.
Okay.
So, part of the recognition of that was I ran in front of a school bus in Northern Ireland. No rules in Northern Ireland that you cannot pass a school bus.
Okay.
So a car was coming past the school bus as I ran across the road in front of the school. I got off the bus, ran across, got tripped over by the car.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Embarrassing how few injuries. I cut my face up a bit and I broke my big toe. So that was the extent of my injuries as a 16-year-old. So I'm going to school the next day with crutches, with a broken toe, having been knocked down by a car. But the point is that I thought I was invulnerable. I was a 16-year-old who thought I was invulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I came to recognize that this life is a gift. Mm. Each day is a gift. Whether you've got a chronic illness or whether you're healthy, you can't boast of another day. And so I realized that I really wasn't, as I understood it, I wasn't in a right relationship with the Lord, with God, with all, even in my own personal consciousness. And I made that decision. I'm going to follow Christ. I'm going to make Christ the Lord of my life. I believe the Bible to be true. I believe the gospel story to be true. I embraced it as my own. And I accepted Christ as my savior, dealing with my sin problem, all of those things that are jargon issues in terms of religion. But experientially, it set me on a course that I'm not going to waste a day. I'm gonna make sure that every day counts. Now, I'm not sure I've kept that over the next 34 years, but that was my determination. That if God has allowed me to live another day and to breathe, then I'm gonna use it to serve Him, and I'm gonna use it to serve others and to do what I can for the benefit of others. And I don't sit with any. I don't sit with any sense of a proud or arrogant spirit. I really believe that I was humbled by that experience and a recognition that I'm so vulnerable. My life is vulnerable. And so getting the sort of the FSHD diagnosis was just another stage in that. I'd stood at
Another
the
humbling
graveside of some
experience.
friends. I'd watched friends be buried young in life, 19-year-old, a 29-year-old. I was just constantly being reminded that every day was a gift,
Wow. But the fact that you've recognized those pivotal moments of that recognizing, and in a way that kind of keeps you on course,
I
right?
think so.
Like, yeah, like that another eye-opening moment. So before, well, 16 years old, so obviously you came to that faith recognition, so to speak, moment, pivot moment at a younger age. And then, but yet, when did you start your pastoral studies? Because you were in medicine first in Northern Ireland.
The pathway
Medicine.
was
Or was it a
medical
straight
school in
line?
Belfast after high school. We do things differently again. There's no we kind of specialize at 16, kind of general studies at high school, finish at 16. So I, then 17, 18, I was specializing in sciences, and then med school starts after high school. And med school is a 5-year program. So I went to med school in Belfast, spent 3 years working in hospitals, and then entered family practice and worked in family practice for several years until I was 30. When I was 30, I went to part-time in family practice and went into a Bible college and began preparing for the pastoral ministry. But for me, that was the end of a 12, 13-year process. Again, I said I came to faith in Christ when I was 16. About a year later, I felt a burden in terms of sharing my faith with others, and a burden to try to help others in their understanding of the scriptures and trying to help people get answers to some of the problems and situations they have in life. But I was told to get a job. So I spoke to my pastor, who said, "Well, you should go and get a job first." But I was already on a pathway to medicine, and I couldn't kind of get off that conveyor belt. So it took me 12, 13 years later to then get to the point where I was at the end of all of that. And I was then, well, I believe that the Lord spoke to me in a meeting. There's a, again, a church service. And I believe that through the scriptures, the Lord directed me to really give my life to full-time pastoral ministry. So that was when I was 29. It took a year after that to then end into the Bible college at that point. But,
So a
it's
true calling. Now, I'm Catholic, so let's not fight. But
Oh,
I'm
no.
Catholic. And like that's the term I would hear when I would talk to a priest and say, "Well, how did you get into this?" Or just curious. "Oh, I had a calling." And some was like a pull, like a feeling, like undeniable. Didn't matter whatever else they tried to do, it just no, didn't fit right. And others literally heard a voice. Like they would say, like a voice in my mind or whatnot. My
That's
father studied as well to be a priest before he was, married and all that. And he said the same thing. He had it from both ends. So he told me is that he had a pull or a calling to be a priest. So like when he was a young man, he went through those studies, probably similar to what you went through. But then before he finished, the Lord told him different then. So I don't know why. Like I said, he's not with me anymore. He's passed on. But when he mentioned those things, he heard the Lord tell him, like, "Don't know, don't do this. I want you to go get married and adopt three kids." And he did. So I like literally did. I was like, "Wow, that's really wild." I'm like, "I've never Like, that's really following directions very well. Like, that is tough to do. So I get that. Like, I, or at least understand that that's something that you really can't deny, can you? Like, if you feel the pull to be in faith to that degree,
You've got to be
you really
careful. Like,
can't
I
deny it.
think you've got to analyze things carefully. If I'm talking to young men now who feel the same way, there is that internal burden, and that sense of compulsion to do something, and that is, I think, does come from God. I think it's a divine experience, but it has to be tested. Like, you, that burden can be misguided, can be false. So again, I went through processes of being kind of examined by my church leaders. Was there an ability to explain the Bible? Could I be a useful pastor, that I wasn't going on a fool's errand? And so I submitted myself to direction in that, but the burden is intense. You know that there's a sense in which I can't get away from this. That continued for 12 years. You know, from 17 through 29, I just could never get away from that. But the thing for me was a kind of a recognition that the health of our bodies is a blessing, but we're all getting old. We're all decaying. And if there is a God in heaven, and if there is a life after death, then preparing for that's more important than even our physical health. And so whilst I respected my colleagues who were involved in medicine and valued all they did, yet I felt there's enough of them. There's plenty of people doing that job. And if the Lord was directing me somewhere else, then I had to do that, you know, and try to bring people at least to consider. Again, I have no power to change anybody's mind, but I try to help people think and say, consider these things, work it through in your own mind, examine the evidence, and make your own decisions.
That's very sound. You know, normally you would have someone have a discussion of faith and they're almost trying to do the convincing, you know, convince you, like a sales pitch. Like, I don't need a sales pitch. Just tell me what you think or the evidence, as you say, and then go from there. And I felt like, yeah, like my parents did that pretty well for Catholics go, here it is. And then you get to a certain point, like, now you kind of got to go with the way you want to go. Like, you got to figure it out. You know, we introduced this. Here's what it is. Now it's got to be yours at some point. And I agree with that. I agree with what you're saying very much. So, and I like the fact that there was a vetting process, so to speak, go through some things, through some steps to make sure that this was not a fool's errand, as you said. I mean, that's enlightening. And I would feel reassured about somebody that was either going through that process. Like, yes, I am on the right path. I wish that was like that for more things. You make sure that you
Helpful.
are where you should be. Yes, very helpful, right? You don't want to be misguided, even if it's by yourself, to make sure that you're going on the right direction. But that must have been difficult to feel like you're on the, I mean, you're on the tracks, but not quite the right ones. Interesting.
I don't regret. I learned so much from medicine, from interpersonal communication with problems, and in pastoral ministry, there are so many physical and spiritual and emotional problems that come regularly that I'm continually kind of drawing from that background and experience. So I believe that God makes no mistakes, in terms of direction and guidance, and I'm very content with the way the Lord has led and guided, and even in terms of new diagnosis and all that, I'm very content that what God is doing in my life is what's good for me, and I kind of rest in that.
And my parents would say the same. They actually had a little sign when I was a kid above my bed, God, it actually would say, God doesn't make any junk, is what it said. Kind of
That's a
reminded me,
good
like,
phrase.
hey, yeah, like, hey, we're all, in like a kid's version of that, So when things are tough or you don't think it's the right thing, oh, have a little more faith because this is kind of how it's maybe supposed to be for whatever reason. You might not know that reason at the time or even ever. I've found. So when you were then in Northern Ireland, you were then transferred, so to speak, or went over to the States, Pennsylvania. Went through the process, and now you're a pastor here, right, in the States. So that means, were you already a pastor then, if I'm doing the math right, before the FSHD diagnosis happened? So this community of faith knew you already, right?
Yes, for 7 years. Yeah.
7 years.
Yeah, we'd have been, yeah, about 7 years together.
And what was that coming out to them about your disease, or did you not do it? Or I'm assuming you did. If you didn't, hey, surprise everybody if you're watching.
I've got news for you. No, I it was a, that was a struggle for various reasons. It was I'm this is unusual for me to kind of do something like this. I'm a pretty private person regarding my own kind of personal life and affairs, and I tend to keep myself to myself regarding family life or personal life. But I was beginning to notice significant challenges. I said, for me, the one of the biggest frustrations is that sense of, if I sit at a desk for an hour, I'm almost done for the day. That takes so much out of me, just in terms of mental and physical fatigue, the weakness that comes through that. So I had to begin to offset some other jobs I was doing with the ministry. And I was going to end up setting aside several responsibilities. And I thought, if I do this, people are going to wonder what's going on. Why am I stopping these various? I was editor of a magazine that we produce. I was looking after some other churches and just different things, part of the ministry. And I was beginning to prepare to step aside from those. So that was kind of felt I have to say something, explain this. But yet, people in the church would have not seen anything with me, really. They wouldn't have seen me really in ordinary life. Some may have seen, like my friends who were shooting, they would have seen some weirdness in how I stood and postural issues, but not a lot. So it was kind of, well, we didn't think there was anything wrong with you, because so much of it is unseen. Because I don't have foot drop. My gait is pretty normal unless I walk a long time. So I had to kind of say to them, this is a problem that's impacting my life and ministry, and I need you to know about it. I want you to pray for me, and we'll pray together. And but you need to be aware of it, you know. And so there was transitions happening, and I felt really I had no choice but to let them know. But they've been wonderful, and they definitely have come alongside. But I think it's also fostered an openness within our congregation of people being willing to ask for prayer. And I suppose I thought I had to lead by example of strength. You're the leader in the congregation, you've got to lead by strength. But there has been a sense in which the Lord has allowed me to lead in weakness, to kind of acknowledge my weakness, and then that's encouraged others to be open about some of the problems they've had and challenges they've had. And there are people in our congregation who are much more unwell than I am. We've an older congregation in some ways, and I'm not the worst affected by any means. But it's helped us all to kind of recognize that we're living this life with our own burdens, but we do it together. It's not an isolation. So my reticence initially was very personal, probably selfish. But being compelled to kind of say something has, I think it's done us good as a congregation, and it's been good for me, and it's definitely been helpful. So we're again reflecting now, I think, yeah, it's been a good thing. But it's
Yeah, it
gone.
can be, but I'm sure it was a little bit, even though you have a strong faith for sure, and somebody sharing news is a little less scary for someone in your mindset of that kind of a strong faith than others, perhaps. But I'm sure there must have been a little bit of a, okay, here we go. I'm gonna say this. Now, did you do it in a public setting, or how did that transpire? Did you just kind of do it slowly as you met people?
No, I did it in a small meeting. I also sent an email out to the congregation and let them know kind of things were changing, and because that's the way I can kind of communicate with everybody at once. But I spoke about it publicly as well. I don't think it's an ideal way to do that. You just got to get it out there. And the challenge is it's a, as you said, it's a diagnosis. It's four letters, but it's unpronounceable when you're nervous in a public setting to try to, and with my accent, I speak quickly. And so you're trying to say, all of these words that merge into one. And then alongside the fear, I was nervous with people then beginning to try to help me and give me all of this life suggestion stuff that the people out of the kindness of their hearts were so keen and said, well, you could try this and this and the other thing. And I just didn't want those conversations. I wasn't ready for those in truth. People were so kind. But I was still trying to get my head around everything and work through it all. But it was all good. It's been good, and
Yeah.
the relationship with the congregation has been built up through it, so I'm thankful.
Good. Yeah. And I think sharing the vulnerability, then usually someone then shares theirs. And then it's like they almost want to seek a kinship to make you feel better and to make them feel better. And then I found that, yes, I have more of a kind of hidden between the eyes kind of way of like approaching this with people that don't really know me. I was in my baseball facility just kind of watching the players doing some drills with another coach. And I was sitting on a little short stool. So I had my legs out and my AFO brace, which wraps around my ankle and like sends these little stringy things to my foot to help lift the front of my foot. And it's a little bit, I had pants on. So it was a little obscure until I kind of stretched the legs out. Then the brace was revealed. And a parent walked over from like the parent area and, said, "Hey, Tim, I don't know if you remember me." I said, "A little bit." I mean, it's hard for me to remember 200 and some odd parents, But I said, "Yeah, I vaguely do." And I said, your son enjoying himself here with us?" "Oh, yeah, for sure." And he kind of pointed right away, to my ankle. I said, "Oh, did you sprain your ankle? You're wearing a brace." I said, "Nope." I said, "I got FSHD." He's like, "What's that?" I go, "Oh, it's a muscular dystrophy." And I said, "I got drop foot, so I can't really lift my foot." And I kind of demonstrated, like, my right foot goes up, left foot doesn't. "Oh, so I need that to kind of lift, or I'll trip and fall, which is not fun, especially when the kids are around. It's like, uh-oh, Coach Tim went down, And so I could kind of see the melting shock of first, "Hey, concerned to, holy cow, that's more than I would kind of thought was going to come out of my voice, right?" And sometimes that approach can be a little startling, and sometimes it is what's needed. I personally think it's always what's needed, because then I see it as an opportunity. Then hopefully, maybe this person will ask, "Well, what is it? What is that?" Now I just educated one more person, and then maybe he'll go home, tell his wife, "Oh, I was talking to Coach Tim, the owner of Focus Baseball, and he just mentioned to me, da da da." And then she might say, "Oh, I never heard of that." And then all of a sudden, someone's Googling, and you know what I mean? Like, I was just thinking, I always think that, like, is there a path to positivity by just sharing the information, And even though it can make you look a little vulnerable, for sure, he didn't reveal anything personal to me, of course. That's fine. That's not what I was in it for. But I'm sure to some, when you did send it out email, obviously that's the best way when you're dealing with a congregation. Like, this way, there's no like whispers or like what happened or this or that. You're kind of just laying it out there. And to some, they might take that as a hit between the eyes, and others might take that as kind of a little bit of a softer ease into this news. But it sounds like you got a positive response no matter what across the board. That's good.
Yeah, very much. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
been positive, and I've made adaptations. Definitely adjusted things in my study, and connect with an ergonomic specialist, giving advice regarding computer positions and where to
Oh,
sit. So a lot of
nice.
those things have been helpful. I have an old fashioned Zimmer frame in the pulpit that I can lean on when I get tired when I'm standing in the pulpit. It's hidden behind the desk. Nobody can see it, but it's there. And so all
Yeah.
those things that. Yeah, the congregation are aware of some of those things now, and
Sure.
it's just part and parcel, and we'll see what
Yeah.
things look like in 5 years' time or 10 years' time. Who knows? Well, every day's
Right.
a gift. Every day's a gift. You just got to
Yes. Just one day. One
keep
day at
going
a
forward.
time. Yep. Every time I go walk the dog and I make it back home, like, okay, I can still walk. I can still make that walk. It's a lot slower. But or more painful or whatnot. But yeah, right. You just try to take one day at a time.
100%. It's all you can do.
So with the future unpredictable, kind of had kind of a last question here for you, which I ask a lot of people, as in like advice. And I'll ask it similar to you, for you, I guess, is like, because it hasn't been long since you've been on this journey, and like hasn't been long since you kind of told people. And in your congregation, not everybody has to do that. It might just be their immediate family or maybe some coworkers or something like that. But I know, and it's healthy for people to come out and tell others in their own time. But for you, and this can even be, I want the advice to be in your way. So even if it's speaking, from your knowledge, even as a pastor, what advice would you give someone that they are definitely on the precipice, they know, hey, I think I really should say this to my circle. But maybe the only apprehension is they're nervous of what the response could be, or whatever that negative outcome that they're afraid of, or showing that they're weak. Sometimes is with the like what would you give advice to kind of guide them forward, whichever forward that means to them?
Yeah, I think you've got to take ownership of your own information and your own news. Nobody should be compelled to share things if it's not what they're comfortable with doing. It's your information, it's your personal experience. But from a pastoral perspective, I look at a world around us that's marked by brokenness and suffering. I see it, and I see it in all manner of situations: relational problems, health issues. There's brokenness. This world is not perfect. It's not intrinsically good. There are difficulties we confront, and I think sometimes when we share that, we're admitting that, and for me that's good. It's good to admit to others that I am weak. It's good to admit to others that I am broken. This creation that the Bible talks about, creation groaning under the weight of sin, there's a brokenness in creation. I think acknowledging that is really beneficial. Letting other people embrace that. And so I encourage people to tell that news. But if you have that faith experience, well, I'm then considering the fact that my weakness is no obstacle to God restoring all things. And so I have a hope. I have a hope of the Savior who will make all things new. And so I live with that hope. And again, that's part, I'm sorry, forgive the sermon, but it's kind of this recognition that me sharing my news actually had the benefit of opening up the doors to say, I admit I'm broken. I've got a sinful nature. I've got a broken body, but I believe in a Savior who's going to fix all of this. And so for me, it was an opportunity, again, not to just to present what I believe the Bible teaches. And so if somebody's in that situation, use your news to benefit others. I don't think any of us should really share our story for some sort of selfish purpose to get sympathy or to manipulate people in some way. It's trying to use our news that's constructive to others in some way. So for me, it's an opportunity to talk about, again, my faith convictions and what I believe Christ has done. For others, they'll have different purposes. But if you're comfortable, then 100% in your own time, in your own way, but don't be scared to admit your weaknesses. I think that's a constructive and beneficial thing to admit. And we have a condition that's marked by weakness. So there's a lot of benefits from that. Sure. As hard as it may be to live it out, there are benefits of how we share it with others. Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic advice. This is fun. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you for the time. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you do for FSHD. You do a great job building awareness, and thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to ever just sit here by myself and like talk. I think I've only had one episode like that. I don't think it had that many viewers. So I need people such as yourself. Stephen, reached out to me on Facebook. Those can do that. I'm out there. My DMs are open, I think the young folks say. So do what Stephen did. You want to share your story? Do it. It wasn't too bad, was it, Stephen? I mean, right? It was
yeah,
okay.
It was pleasant. It was nice. It was a good conversation. Good. You do well, sir. It's very good. Thank you for the time.
I'm just trying to, invite others. And it was a pleasure talking with you, sir. Thank you much for joining us, sharing your story. I guarantee you've impacted a lot of people by doing so. So we appreciate it.
Lord bless. Take care for now. Bye.
Thank you. That is Mr. Stephen Pollock from, Hales originally from Northern Ireland, now living in Pennsylvania. I didn't even bring up the Steeler thing. I should have opened up the shirt and showed him. I know he sees the terrible towel. Probably doesn't matter. He's not probably into American football like some of us are here. But I digress. The conversation that we just had with Stephen was impactful. And I think for many reasons. I think there's a lot of people that use faith to help them guide them. To use for strength, and God knows we need strength with our bodies failing in that regard. I did admire his strong faith, regardless of the fact that he has this diagnosis. The faith, the recognition of that came for him at 16. And I've heard this very, similar to others that I've met in the faith world, if it's Catholic like myself or not. And this calling, this pull. I worked with a gentleman, actually used to be on some of my old podcast show episodes back when I had another podcast before this one. And his name is Josh. And like he would talk about his faith very openly. And I always admired that, and you went to a Bible school as well, and had really good insight how to guide through life's rocky roads, right? Just the bumps and those things. And when Stephen reached out through social media to share his story, to share this, yes, faith was in there, but you know, it was really like talking to people about FSHD. And I've said this multiple times. I want to get these episodes out beyond our community circle. And I think the only way to do that is to have as many different people here as possible sharing their stories, sharing how they have a life with FSHD, how it affects them, how do they work through it, how do they continue to do what they do, how do they tell others they have it. These are very important because I think these are lessons that can be learned and shared and help others that don't necessarily have FSHD. Like this isn't exclusively stories of life just for those with FSHD. It's for people with faith, people without, people searching for it. And I think having Stephen here kind of answered a lot of those questions. So really grateful that he took the time to be here. And he has faith regardless, I guess is my biggest point. I think some people would shake their faith, and it didn't seem to at all for Stephen. So admire that about him. So really grateful that he was here. If you want to be on the show, please email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. You can find me on Facebook. I probably post mostly about baseball stuff on there, if you don't mind that. But, you know, direct message me there if you want. Check me out on there. It's wide open. You know, nothing to hide there. So just go ahead and take a look. Reach out like Stephen did. Happy to hear from you. Actually, I'd love to hear from you. And may we connect. If you'd like to be on the show, great. Want to nominate somebody, you can do the same way. Appreciate you listening in today. It's always an honor that you are bringing our episodes of these great stories of people within our community into your ears, either through YouTube or through your where you find podcasts, which you can find us a lot of places, right? YouTube, Spotify, and so on. We're out there. Share with your friends. Follow the show. We appreciate it, and we appreciate you listening. So thank you again, all, and thank you again to Stephen Pollack for being on the show and sharing your story. A lot to think about, and wish you all the best. Until next time, you've been listening to the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. Take care.